Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how to lower your C-reactive protein that can prevent heart attacks and strokes, but it also can help you if you're pre-diabetic. A new way of helping men regain their testosterone in a natural way. Also, if you want to prevent or reverse Alzheimer's disease, one single food can play an enormous role in that, plus a lot more on health and healing. But today we don't have a guest because it's our commentary day. I've created some of my own commentaries, plus commentaries on topics that are important from our environmental segment from David Gutras. Neonicotinoids are now proven to cause colony collapse in honeybees. A Harvard study, we'll talk about that. Also, oil giants as profits are assured, and this is from Paul Brown, Climate News Network. It's all about how Shell, which, by the way, is the world's largest oil company, is talking about environmental problem. What environmental problem? We're going to be making lots of profit because no government is going to go off oil. The future of food, interesting what some people are doing to grow food. 500,000 pounds of fresh fish, 150,000 heads of lettuce annually. It's called aquaponics and aquaculture. And they're doing it in a little tiny footprint. I'll tell you about that. No rest for psychopharma until every American is drugged. Kelly Patricia O'Meara. Also, endless war, five disturbing things in America's military budget, and the worst places on earth to be a worker. Gee whiz, we're in that area. And don't be fooled by conspiracy theory smears. For those who sneer and say, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. Well, let's take a look at the facts. CNN and Newsweek, they're into a full-scale tirade against what they call conspiracy theories. We, on the other hand, through the eyes of Andrew Krieg, Global Research, will show you actual conspiracies that no one can doubt because the information is in, and yet we don't recognize them. Big Pharma and the Gates Foundation, guinea pigs for the drug makers, Jacob Levitch, Global Research. And that's not all, but I'm pretty sure that's what we'll have time for. Let's begin. Most of the time, people have never had their blood chemistry checked, but you should. If you're over the age of 40, you should have it checked twice a year. It's not expensive. It's not painful. They simply take some urine or blood, and they check it for various hormones and markers. Now, one of the markers is called C-reactive protein. When it's elevated, it makes you more at risk of a heart attack or stroke. According to an archive of medical research report, a double-blinded trial with pre-diabetics, which, by the way, probably are 60 million Americans are pre-diabetic, found that when they had low magnesium levels and then began to supplement and brought their magnesium up, which is not hard to do, 800 units a day will bring it right back up, they reduced the C-reactive protein substantially. And that was enough to take them out of harm's way. Quote, our research shows that oral magnesium supplementation significantly decreases the C-reactive protein levels in apparently healthy subjects with prediabetes, and taking into account that elevated C-reactive protein is related to glucose metabolic disorder, our findings may have important implications for the policies focused in its prevention. Okay. Now, we have a lot of people in our society suffering from asthma. And if you've been around people who have that gasping feeling like they're not getting enough air, and they feel a congestion in the chest, a tightening in the chest, those are frequently symptoms of asthma. And generally it's treated with some form of chemical inhaler. But there's another way. And I'm not suggesting people throw away or stop using their inhalers. There's a process. It starts with magnesium. Why? Because magnesium is a natural bronchodilator. It's great for many things in the body. It can relax your muscles, helps you get a better night's sleep. It can increase the enzyme activation at the heart level. But it also is a natural bronchodilator. And bronchodilators are agents that relax your bronchia, tiny breathing tubes inside your lungs. And during an asthma attack, your bronchioles tighten up and constrict the flow of oxygen. In this study, it was shown that 340 milligrams of magnesium daily for 6.5 months improved lung function, better asthma control, better quality of life compared to a placebo group. Also, there is butterbur. Butterbur helps people reduce their intake of asthma medications. It's a plant in the daisy family. It not only fights allergies, where it traditionally was used, but it also is good for asthma. In a clinical trial, patients were treated with butterbur extract for 2 months, followed by an optional 2-month treatment period. At the end of the trial, asthma symptoms improved more than 40%. And then there are certain foods that are great for helping with asthma. Onions, garlic, lemon juice, and ginger. They thin the mucus, and they allow greater oxygen flow into the lungs. Also, ginger is noted as an anti-asthmatic. And then, get off the dairy and the wheat. And that can make a difference as well. A lot of people are concerned when they start seeing that they have low testosterone, and frequently you see it not by having your blood tested, but by having lack of energy, erectile dysfunction, lost libido, shriveling of the muscles in the body, sagging skin, moodiness. According to the PubMed-listed journal Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine, ashwagandha, that's ashwagandha, by taking the root extract, it can promote healthy testosterone and other metrics related to male sexual function. So that's good, and that's I think that's something men should consider, because there's no downside, no toxic effect. It's ashwagandha is a woody shrub, and it's not a tall plant, 1 to 4 feet high, and it's been around a long time. It's been used in Ayurvedic medicine for over 4,000 years, and it's been known as the male herb. And the herb derives from Sanskrit, meaning that it's as strong as a horse. So that's something that the men should consider. Now, we have a lot of people suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's. And the old adage of an apple a day keeps a doctor away, it's more valid now than ever. But what if you don't eat apples? What if instead you'd like to have some apple juice? New research has discovered that drinking apple juice 3 times a week helps prevent Alzheimer's disease and heart disease. A neurobiologist, Dr. Thomas Shea, and his researchers, University of Massachusetts, topped off 10 years of studying apples' effects on brain health. They used test tubes and petri dishes and mice for years. They finally then confirmed their findings with a human clinical trial. For the research, they used Alzheimer's patients. They were fed 4 ounces of apple juice twice daily for 30 days. There were improvements with memory, as well as the negative emotional moods normally associated with Alzheimer's diminished substantially. Dr. Shea concluded that by drinking apple juice only 3 times a week, you could reduce your chances of Alzheimer's by 75%. And they also found that it was protective of the heart and reduced inflammation. Now, a Florida State University study by Dr. Bayram Arjmani involved several women ages 45 to 65, discovered that a diet heavy of apples reduced the bad LDL cholesterol by 23% in 6 months, also caused weight loss. So don't buy the pasteurized apple juice in the store. Get organic, unfiltered apple juice. But the best way to go is to juice it yourself. I suggest that you simply juice organic-only apples because non-organic are heavily sprayed. Organic apples, I would suggest 16 ounces. But I would also do this. I would spike that. At the same time, I would take some vitamin C, lemon juice, and put in there, and B complex, 100 milligrams, and extra B12, probably 1 milligram of methylated, upwards of 1 milligram to 2 milligrams of folic acid, methylated. That will also help. And the nutrients that stimulate brain activity. Glycerophosphorylcholine is good. Phosphatidylserine is good. Those are outstanding. And resveratrol. Now, if you had that, instead of 4 ounces twice a day, if you had 16 ounces, 8 ounces in the morning, 8 ounces in the afternoon, with those nutrients and divided doses, then you would really do a lot more for turning off inflammation in the brain. Vitamins for acne. There are some that are known to specifically impact the 50 million Americans with acne. The most important nutrients for your skin are beta-carotene, which, by the way, you can find in fruits and vegetables in abundance. And they can help with cold sores, psoriasis, wounds, burns, sunburn, eczema. Zinc is the essential trace element. It does so many good things in the body, including your immune system, but also helps with acne. And vitamin E and vitamin C. Those are your super skin and hair nutrients, your immune system nutrients also. And vitamin D. We know it helps promote healthier bones, lowers blood pressure, wards off cancer and chronic illness, but it's also important for helping your skin. Why? Because research indicates that vitamin D can increase oil-secreting sebaceous production of defensin, which may have antibacterial properties. And it wards off acne by giving the immune system a beneficial boost. So those are the things that you want to use. Plus, you want to use natural astringents like witch hazel, chamomile. Those are effective skin cleansers. And while herbs including wild indigo and black walnut and burdock and oregano, Oregon grape, are also effective. So those are things that make a difference. Looking at the clock, and we're now on to our next segment. From our environmental segment, from David Gutris, from Natural News, quote, the hypothesis that neonicotinoid insecticides are the primary factor responsible for the ongoing collapse of honeybee colonies, this has been strengthened in a study conducted by researchers from the Harvard School of Public Health and the Worcester County Beekeepers Association. This has been published in the Bulletin of Insectology. The study, which showed that two varieties of neonicotinoids induce colony collapse disorder among honeybee colonies during the winter, replicated earlier findings from the same researchers. Quote, we demonstrated again in this study that neonicotinoids are highly likely to be responsible for triggering colony collapse disorder in honeybee hives that were healthy prior to the arrival of winter. Now, why is this important? Since 2006, honeybees in numerous countries have been devastated by colony collapse disorder, in which bees abandon their hives over the winter and die. Now, the ongoing crisis has raise grave concern for its potential effects on the global food supply, one-third of which is dependent upon honeybees. Put another way, honeybees are used to pollinate 130 different crops with an annual value of $15 billion just in the United States. So they've given us every excuse imaginable. Now we know the truth. And so what we should do is we should demand the banning of all neonicotinoids. And the USDA will not do it on its own because it has aligned itself with its director, with the genetically engineered industries. So let's protest it by writing letters to our legislator. We have the science. No more hearings necessary where they stack them with pro-industry people. Let's ban it. We've been led to believe that there's a great concern by our government and its agencies to get renewable energy going so we can no longer be dependent upon fossil fuels. Well, it's simple. It's not happening. Hasn't happened. It won't happen. And don't for a second think because they have funded some money with some of the people they know who are insiders, private contractors for solar or wind. The big future is going to be in the real biofuels, like algae, not the biofuels they've been using, like sugarcane or grains. In fact, the two best we could use, geothermal. Iceland uses geothermal right now and has for a long time. There's 10,000 times more geothermal available than there is oil or gas. And it's inexpensive to get out of the ground. And we have thousands upon thousands of these geothermal streams and pockets around the United States. Next, current. All the water of the world moves with the current. And therefore, it's always reliable. In some areas, the current's stronger. But there are turbines that you can put in the water, and they can generate, through the current movement, they can generate electricity, and that can help as well. Those are two ways we're not using that we should. But here's what Paul Brown of Clinical News Network has to say. Quote, investors are being told by Shell, which, as I mentioned earlier, is the biggest oil company in the world, that the world will go on burning more and more oil despite the threat of climate change. And Shell believes that governments will not damage its business by taking rapid action on climate change. In fact, they say all of its oil reserves will be needed and sold at a profit. In a robust reply to a recent report by the Carbon Tracker Initiative, Shell explained that the company reasoning for investing in tar sands and other high-cost, difficult-to-extract oil reserves. It says that an ever-expanding global economy, fueled by population growth and great prosperity, will need more and more oil and gas, at least until 2050. This will support higher prices. And the Carbon Tracker Initiative report and subsequent research by Friends of the Earth Netherlands says that many of the Shell's company's long-term high-carbon projects in the pipeline will become highly vulnerable to losses or will simply be left in the ground when international law starts to constrain the burning of fossil fuels to limit temperature rises. However, now this is what's important. The Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Atlantic Partnership are putting a language in that would allow those who are seeking these resources to pollute and not be held accountable and not limited by any of the existing local, county, state, or federal laws. Let me give you an example. Right now, in several communities, these tend to be smaller communities, let's say a few thousand people, there is water in small aquifers. But some time ago, the hydrofracking companies came in, and when the economy was down, offered the township money, not a lot, small amount, but promised them more in the future from the earnings. And in turn, these people signed over their water rights, not realizing it's all in the details. And as a result, now that there's severe drought, the town needs the water, but the oil companies and the gas company are saying, nope, that's our water. And in virtually all the state cases, the state will side with the person that has the contract who owns the water. So now communities don't have the water they need because the water has been going to the 3 million gallons a year through one of these gas hydrofracking wells. That's going to become rampant when you consider that one state could put easily 20,000 of these in a state. And right after the election, I'll bet anything that the governor of New York says yes to gas hydrofracking. Like everything else, put a nice face on it. But then when people get close enough to look at it, they'll see the danger. By keeping the question open, gains allies. Till after the election, then the deal. Probably be starting in the western poorest counties of New York, Columbia County, and some of the western counties. And so it is. Now, these international treaties, they usurped state treaties, state laws, I should say. So we're bound to them, or we'll get huge fines. But let's just say there's a different scenario. Let's say that there's enough water for you on your farm or a community or town and the frackers. The difference is they're polluting your water. They don't care because they're not drinking their water. Their water is going into the well and with all the chemicals they put in there. Well, A, in Pennsylvania and some other places, they're writing laws that it's against the law to disclose the actual toxic cancer-causing chemicals that are in the gas hydrofracking process. They even want to take you to jail if you tell people what's in the toxic brew that's going into the ground. So let's say that one day you find out that you have ulcers in your throat, you have skin lesions, your hair's falling out, you're vomiting, and it's determined it's the water. You can't sue them. In fact, your doctor in Pennsylvania is not allowed to report that your illness was due to environmental chemical exposure from gas hydrofracking. Now, they played this system. That meant that the ALEC at the state level and federal lobbyists knew that sooner or later this is going to turn ugly, and they wanted to look back and say, all right, did we learn some lessons from Love Canal and the Superfund sites? Yes. That when the citizens become aware that they've been living on landfills or the water air is tainted and you did it and you knew it was bad, then huge settlements follow. Look at asbestos as an example. So by having the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the Atlantic Partnership, you couldn't sue. You couldn't report, your doctor couldn't report your injuries from gas hydrofracking. That's how much power they have. All the more reason to pay attention to fighting gas hydrofracking. From Bill Shohavi from Health Impact, failed vaccines become public health crisis. Quote, many diseases once thought to have been eliminated by modern medicine are now making a comeback due to the wide-scale failure of vaccines. Unfortunately, you will not read this news in the national mainstream media in the United States. Heavily funded by the pharmaceutical industry, they continue to promote the false belief that a lack of vaccination is causing new outbreaks of old diseases. The facts do not support this belief, so it is not news. It is called propaganda. Vaccination rates are higher in the United States than any other country in the world. The clearest example of an old disease making a comeback due to vaccine failure is whooping cough. The pertussis vaccine is a failure. This fact cannot be disputed, and pharmaceutical companies are scrambling to develop a new pertussis vaccine to replace the current one that no longer works. In the meantime, the FDA is not removing the failed vaccines from the vaccine schedule, and as a result, those vaccinated for pertussis are coming down with whooping cough and spreading it to others. I repeat, the kids who are being vaccinated are the ones getting the disease for which they are vaccinated. going just against the public health policy. Yes, even though most mainstream media are reporting the exact opposite, that whooping cough outbreaks are caused by the unvaccinated population, the exact opposite is occurring, and the local media can no longer ignore these events. Some local mainstream media are now starting to report these outbreaks because they present a public health crisis. One of the most recent cases is being reported by ABC News in Sacramento, California. Jessica Chavez said it was just a normal trip to the hospital. Her 18-month-old daughter had come down with a mild virus, so she took her to Kaiser Permanente in southern Sacramento in the middle of the month. But when her daughter got sicker and sicker, Chavez said they went back to Kaiser, and she was coughing uncontrollably and sometimes had difficulty breathing. Quote, I took her there to get her better, not to get her worse. Test results after the visit showed that her daughter had pertussis, also known as whooping cough. Quote, it really scared me. I was at work when I found out. I broke down crying. It terrified me to death. Then Chavez discovered an employee at the hospital went to work with pertussis in April. At the same time, she was there. Kaiser Permanente South Sacramento's chief of infectious disease, Dr. John Belko, released the following statement, quote, regarding recent media reports about the ongoing pertussis outbreak in Sacramento County, Kaiser did recently confirm that an employee who was vaccinated against the disease tested positive for pertussis. The employee left work as soon as symptoms appeared and was diagnosed. As a precaution, Kaiser is contacting members and employees who may have been exposed to the employee as much as 3 weeks prior to the diagnosis, because those infected with pertussis can carry the disease for some time before symptoms appear. Out of an abundance of caution, we are contacting members who may have been exposed. Okay, this should be national headline news, but it is not. Hospitals that require their employees to be vaccinated are no longer safe, as the vaccines have failed. This is clearly true with pertussis vaccine. So the next time someone smilingly says, now make sure you get your shots, you should say, all right, I'll get my shot. But first, could you give me the independent peer-reviewed literature with the double-blind placebo-controlled study as a gold standard showing me that this vaccine is both safe and effective for any individual. There is no such study in existence. They can't do it. So they make them up. They'll test one vaccine against another. That is not an accurate test. And then when a whole group of people with the measles comes down with the measles, a whole group who got the chickenpox vaccine come down with chickenpox, a whole group that got whooping cough come down with whooping cough disease, how can they then say that the vaccine protected them? Because they have antibodies. I have interviewed many immunologists who will tell you the fact that your body can produce an antibody does not mean that that antibody is necessarily protective. So the entire science on vaccination should be challenged. I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. We're talking about the issues that make a difference in our lives. I thought this was important because I see this as going to be a huge phenomena. And I see people being able to do this since there is a movement now, and it's growing, away from living your full life in a city. A lot of people are seeking an alternative lifestyle in sustainable environments and around progressive communities. Now, the fastest growing city in America is what? What is the fastest growing city in America? All right, I'll make it easy. What is considered the most progressive city in America? Austin, Texas. Second, Dallas. What is the benefit of being around a lot of people who are open to allowing you to live your own life, who are very creative, who are very humane in a beautiful environment? Well, that's what people are looking to do. What is the limitation of Austin? They're running out of water. big time. Well, now that creates a contradiction. You have more and more people wanting to be in Austin than any other place in America. At the same time, you don't have the resources of water to sustain them. Someone should have done their homework, because I gave a lecture down in Austin, and it was packed in the grand ballroom of the hotel. In fact, I had to do two because the first one couldn't fit everyone. I don't know how many people were there. I'm going to guess 1,800. In any case, I asked them, what do you like about Austin? What don't you like about Austin? And they gave me the pros and cons. It's kind of neat because I hadn't eaten. I'd filmed in the morning, and I'd traveled the night before to drive to where I was going to film. Filmed, and then at the last moment, when I knew I only had an hour before the plane took off, I hustled the airport, got on a plane, flew in, and then drove to the hotel. And then had like 20 minutes, make a change of clothes, quick shower, down. And then all these people were in the outside quarter, and they said, what are we going to do? There's no more room. And the local sponsor said, we didn't anticipate this many people. We've had a lot of health speaker, and it's never packed. And I said, well, was there any advertising? No. I said, well, someone had to know about this. And they said, oh, it was the social media. Now, I've never Twittered. I guess I have 10, 20,000 people on this Twitter account. And I said, well, how'd they know I was going to be here? And this person came over and says, here, it's Gary's coming to town, bringing all the good energy. Let's show up. And zip, it goes all around the community. And that's why today, rather than, I haven't done an ad for a lecture in years, because social media, the people want the message, show up. So anyhow, I said, well, why don't you all go out and have dinner and come back in an hour and a half, and I'll do a second lecture. Oh, that was fine. Problem solved. Now it's late. I get out. I'm guessing it's around 10:30. I hadn't eaten yet. I said, is there a natural food restaurant? And they said, yeah, there's one. We drive over there, and it's closed. And but one of the people evidently had been at the first lecture. So they opened the doors, and we filled the place, and they were very, very thoughtful, and they were very kind. Nice meal. Very nice environment. It's like a macrobiotic restaurant. But when you're driving around, I had a chance to drive around the community. Really neat place. A lot of good energy down there. But then I'm noticing how many lawns are dry. But instead of using natural low-water vegetation like cacti and different plants and perennials, not annuals, and getting away from the grasses, they just have brown. Now it's gotten worse. Now there's all kinds of water restrictions. Now think about all the golf courses in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Kansas. Yeah. Those are all going to be gone. First, they'll charge extra amounts of money. All right. Initially, they'll have less profit. They'll pay for more water, but then they're going to be restricted by water. Doesn't matter how much you're going to pay. You're going to have a meter, and it's going to cut off. And then you're going to have brown environments where you can't play. You can have a driving range, but you can't have a golf course. That's going to happen in the next 2 years. In 24 months, expect to see the closure of a lot of golf courses. But then one of the reasons people are in gated communities is because of the golf course. The most golf course-heavy community in the world is Naples, Florida. There's more golf courses there than any other place I'm aware of on the planet per population. I think there's 78 or 80. I haven't checked in the last year. Well, they're beautiful environments, and people have nice homes. But I just did a lecture down in Naples, too, in fact. And they're both great groups of people. And you start to think, what would this place look like if you didn't have the capacity to water the lawns every day, twice a day, three times a day? Then it wouldn't be a beautiful environment. Think of the drop in property values. So what I see is in at least 7 states with severe drought that will never in our lifetimes change, those golf courses and those gated communities are going to be dead. Secondly, I also see that we're just running out of water. In Texas, West Texas, I was just told this morning that that West Texas, west just the outskirts of Fort Worth, they're not getting the rains anymore because the pattern of wind is not going far enough west, it's going east, so that's the new desert. All right, that's the new desert. What about all the thousands, tens of thousands of people that bought there in the last 10, 20 years thinking this would be great? Big mistake. They should have done their homework, not listened to brokers. So what you have is you have more people wanting to be in places, but they're not looking at the sustainable factor. From now on, let's look at the sustainability factor. And I think one of the things that's going to be sustainable is being able to grow your own food through gardening, organic gardening. Remember, we all have to eat, and we all have to have water. By the way, some communities now are relegated where the towns ran out of water. They started recycling toilet water. Yeah. And you know what they found? It was actually cleaner than what was coming out of the wells before that. Well, I'm not really big on the idea that you can filter toilet water, and yet that they have no choice. How many people? Just in Texas alone, 6,200,000 people are water restricted or will be out of water completely in the next 12 to 24 months. That's just in Texas. Now you take California, Nevada, Nevada is the driest state in the United States. You look at the falling dams. So I'm just giving you a heads up that there are places you simply shouldn't move to. And if you live there, you should consider in a gradual, non-rush way. I'm not telling you to, you know, head for the door today. I'm saying start the process of looking at where ideally you would like to live, where could you live, where there's progressive people, great environment, clean air, where you can be self-supporting, and then move and start making the move towards that direction. This is from Jamel from Truth Out, The Future of Food. Quote, imagine a fish farm and a vegetable garden that produces 500,000 pounds of fresh fish and 150,000 heads of lettuce each year. Now imagine the farm uses aquaponics, aquaculture, greenhouses, and is actually a reclaimed bioremediated wastewater treatment plant. Lastly, imagine that despite being located less than 4 miles from the downtown area of a city more than 6 million people, it is completely self-sustaining and leaves no carbon footprint. This lofty ideal is not a dream. It is a process of becoming a reality. The farm is the brainchild of artist Jack Massing and restaurateur Rob Cromie, and the city is Houston, Texas. Quote, food is our second largest trade deficit behind oil, and half of all fish are imported. 55-year-old Cromie told Truth Out while standing in front of long open pools of water that he aims to fill with fish. Quote, so we'd better be thinking of what we can do about that. Cromie watched the prices he was paying for the seafood he uses in his 4 Houston restaurants double overnight in the immediate wake of the 2010 British Petroleum oil disaster, the Gulf of Mexico. And that got him thinking. I'm looking at why my food was costing so much, so I started researching fish and shrimp farming. Messing is one of 2 men known domestically and internationally as the famous artist team, the Art Guys, whose work Art News has described a straddling of the boundaries between art and life. And so they work together to create this, and that's what they're doing. They file for permits and securing necessary funding to have the farm operational within 6 months. So let's just do the math here. They will be able to get about $2 a pound wholesale. So that's $1 million from their fish, and they'll get wholesale about a dollar a head from their lettuce, 75 cents to a dollar a head. So they're well over $1.2 million, and it only takes one person, one employee, to work a hydroponic house. So that is what they're doing, and I'm suggesting people in their own backyards could create their own hydroponic house and then take their crops to market. And in the next several months, I'll be doing some video workshops, free as a public service, to show you the different businesses you can create from your home that can help supplement your income and help wean you away from feeling the only opportunity you have is the job you have, and if that goes south, then you're in trouble. It's not. There's a lot you can do. Next up, the worst places on the planet to be a worker, from the Huffington Post, Kevin Short. Well, the best place for workers, workers' rights, is Denmark. They achieved a perfect score, 97 indicators of workers' rights. They graded it the best in the world was number one, but the worst was five. We were four. We're right at the back of the worst. We're right up there with Greece and Hong Kong. So this is about honoring workers, giving them a living wage, and seeing that the workers' rights are met so they have a quality of life. Not us. Also from Kelly Patricia O'Meara. Quote, with nearly 79 million Americans currently taking at least one mind-altering psychiatric drug, it boggles the mind that a May 13, 2014 USA Today article titled The Cost of Not Caring, Nowhere to Go, would argue that the nation is somehow suffering from a lack of mental health treatment. Put another way, the current number of Americans taking psychiatric drugs is nearly the equivalent of the entire state of California, Texas, New York combined. The article discusses the cost of mental health treatment and how the taxpayer funds are needed to support the increases. Of course, the pharmaceutical-funded National Alliance on Mental Illness, an organization which the late professor of psychiatry, Dr. Thomas Saws, said they represent the interests of the mental patients the same way that the Ku Klux Klan represents the interests of black Americans, always available to champion mental health anything. But the real force behind the article was the push to increase mental health screening, which is part of Representative Tim Murray's Republican of Pennsylvania's controversial legislation, H.R. 3717. I repeat, H.R. 3717, the Helping Families with Mental Health Crisis Act. Not only creates a new mental health czar, but also increases spending on mental health training, screening, and awareness campaigns by a whopping $270 million a year. And this PAC taxpayer mental health financial benevolence is expected without any data to support that even one psychiatric disorder is based on science. We're still nowhere in the article is mentioned, made known, of the known serious adverse reactions to the psychiatric drugs commonly used as treatment. Thomas Insel, director of the National Institutes of Mental Health, also throws his weight behind the push for increased spending for mental health treatment. Well, so what is my thought on this? First, I've written an article on this, an investigative report on psychiatry itself, as well as the medications they use, and I completely deconstruct the science behind every major drug in psychiatry and mental health today. I show you the drugs were never safe or effective. I show you that placebo sugar pills are just as effective. Also, I point out all the suicides and the deaths, the corruption within the system, the lack of science in psychiatry itself, and the idea that they're drugging two-year-olds with Ritalin. So, why? Because babies and toddlers and young children, adolescents are compliant drug takers. Because it's a profitable move. It's smart business if you're a pharmaceutical industry to convince a teacher that Johnny's not paying attention or Johnny's looking out the window, Johnny has a brain chemical imbalance. it's easy enough to coerce the parents into believing that they've got to do it, or Johnny will fail. So Johnny's put on a stimulant similar to cocaine. Now, when Johnny loses weight and can't sleep and becomes agitated, they give him another drug. Now your kid is fully drugged, but it's also a full-paying patient. Medicaid will pay it at the state level. For older adults, Medicare. We're out of pocket. Any way you put it, when you have 10 million kids on psychiatric drugs and 25% of all women over the age of 45 on antidepressive, antipsychotic drugs, you're a smart marketing person. You're not a good human being. You're having a serious moral lapse, but morality and ethics have nothing to do with our business models. So say no to all mental health screening. And who will be the biggest advocate for mental health screening to make sure that all of us get mentally health screened? To help society and our families by being able to detect those by purely scientific methods in advance of you shooting someone or jumping out of a window. We don't want that, so we're going to screen you early and regularly. Hillary Clinton, she's the biggest public advocate for mental health screening. Now follow the money trail. Follow the political connections. Follow the political appointees by her husband. The pharmaceutical industry owns the White House, as does the insurance industry and Wall Street. It's a big group. These guys are ruthless, they're smart, and they realize how susceptible people are. So say no to psychiatric drugs. Say no to believing that there's a brain chemical imbalance. There is not. Say no to having your child tested. When you do that, then at least you're not going to be the victim. Finally, and then I'm going to open our lines for talkback at 888-874-4888. From the staff writers of Terra Daily, time running out as CO2 levels hit new high. Quote, atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations have crossed a new threshold. The UN's weather agency said Monday, highlighting the urgency of curbing man-made climate-altering greenhouse gases. For the first time, the mean monthly CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere topped 400 parts per million throughout the northern hemisphere, which pollutes more than the south. That's according to the World Meteorological Organization. Quote, this should serve as yet another wake-up call about the constantly rising levels of greenhouse gases which are driving climate change, said the World Meteorological Organization's chief, Michael Gerard. Quote, if we are to preserve our planet for future generations, we need urgent actions to curb new emissions of these heat-trapping gases. Time is running out. Now, I can remember just 2 years ago, we had Bill McKibben on the program, and Bill was talking about why we should be doing something about the rising CO2 levels. And scientists were saying that we had plenty of time, probably 3 or 4 decades before we hit 400. Well, we've hit 400 in a little under 2 years. Every single prediction they make about when something's going to happen that can adversely affect us, they're always wrong by magnitudes. So when they say we've got plenty of time before the giant ice sheets start to melt into Antarctica, they're wrong. In Greenland, they're wrong. Now, later this summer, it is my intention to fly to Greenland and Antarctica, as well as other glaciers in the Himalayas, also in the Sahara Desert, going through the islands in the Pacific. It's a major worldwide filming over a 30-day period. I don't stay long when I'm in a place. I'll go in, I'll get set up, film, make the point I've got to make, and off. Because then I'm going to compare these to 5 years ago and show you how radically speeded up everything is. So we have no accurate model when this stuff's going to happen. So we could go to bed one night, wake up the next day, and we could have a foot or more increase in the water levels, which would be disastrous. When the surges come in, the storms come in, the tide comes in. So when they tell you we got time, didn't they tell us? Yes, they did. Go look at your research. Look at how many people told us not to worry. We wouldn't be hitting 400 parts per million for a long time, not in your lifetime. Well, we hit it, not just in our lifetimes, but in the last 2 years. It's a serious issue. And when I'm finally finished with this, I'll show you all the people who've been living in denial, because what I'm also doing is I'm collecting all of the different articles written to either deny any form of ecological disaster and who or who've been wrong on it. So I'm going to have a rogue's gallery of bad journalism. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Ed from Huntington, Long Island. Hi, Ed.
Very glad to talk to you. You're doing a great job. Should be more people like you around. The one thing that we seem to lose track of, the fact that according to the 2011 decisions, the 90-some-odd pages recondensed of it, they state, the oil companies themselves have written this, that it will take anywhere from 2.8 to 7.4 million gallons of potable water to frack each one of these wells, with no way of getting rid of the backflow other than to try to pump it back into the ground, which will sooner or later end up in a water table.
You are correct, and that was why I was mentioning that we should not sign any of these treaties, and we should have complete transparency. If they won't allow us to know what ingredients go into the ground, why would we allow them to put it into the ground? Because of political payoffs. If a treaty was signed that was written by the same companies that intend to do the polluting or manufacturing, exploiting, why should we have any allowance for this? We should kill these treaties completely, not allow them. Not to bring them in and modify them, but to keep them out completely.
Where is Governor Cuomo on this? He's been kicking a can down the road now for years.
No, he hasn't been kicking it down the can down the road. He doesn't want to alienate the left base that thinks he's another good Democrat. All right, you just take a look at, I'll tell you what, there's a guy named Andy Credico. Andy is far, far and away the most honest person I know. He's not going to get elected anything, but he's running against Cuomo. Look at the sheet of things Cuomo has supported, then look at what he opposes, and they're absolutely opposite what a legitimate Democrat would be against. But once he's reelected, watch how fracking has to happen because of the jobs we need up in these depressed... I can just hear the political spin. And why hasn't he closed Indian Point? We should have closed that a long time. That right there tells you a lot when you put political considerations ahead of the safety of 20 million people living within 50 miles of Indian Point. Thanks a lot for your comments. From Richmond, Virginia, say hello to Richard. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
Are you on?
You're on.
Oh. Hey, I was listening to Utrecht Lead show yesterday. I thought this was really interesting. The guy she's interviewing, Dorenzo, was talking about the WIP in Carlsbad, New Mexico, which they've had that... the casket that released radioactive plutonium recently. And he said that there's all sorts of fracking that goes on around that site. So they're saying it's cat litter, but maybe it was leaking from the fracking. Just interesting. Thought I'd throw that in there.
I appreciate it. I heard the show, and I would concur. It deserves to be fully investigated. There should not be any fracking within 100 miles of any nuclear facility.
No, I agree, and that I didn't realize that that's where all the cherries and pears and everything, all that stuff around that area is right there on the Columbia River and close to Hanford Reservation.
You got it.
Yeah.
I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Let's say hello to Chris from Maryland. Hi, Chris.
How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing
fine.
For taking
my call. I have a quick question about the nuclear testing, not nuclear testing, but the dye that they inject into your body to see whether or not you have clogged arteries,
mm-hmm.
the nuclear whatever they call it, but it says nuclear. It says just a trace of nuclear. It doesn't sound too kosher to me, and I'm diabetic and on dialysis, so I have peripheral artery issues and just a host of other health issues, and I'm very concerned about that because of my heart, and I was wondering if that is a safe means of checking the heart.
Well, I believe it's safe. The answer is no.
Okay.
But more importantly, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to ask you a quick yes or no.
Okay.
Wait till I finish, please. Are you using coenzyme Q10, coenzyme A, garlic, L-arginine, vitamin C, bioflavonoids, calcium and magnesium, L-carnitine, on a regular basis, along with lycopene, phosphatidylcholine, pycnogenol, and potassium, and red yeast rice? What else would I put in there? Vitamin E, melatonin, and trimethylglycine. Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
That's a
do
lot.
This. Go up on. Well, go up and look at a way of approaching heart disease and diabetes and kidney disease, because kidney disease is almost always a direct result of other conditions.
Is it reversible, kidney disease?
Has it been reversed? Yes. I can't promise in your or any other case it would be, but that when you've seen improvements as I have, but mm-hmm. It's only a holistic protocol that will do it, but at least you have something to start your journey.
Where can I find this?
Just
I'm blind
on,
as well.
Just go up on blog.garynull.com.
Blog.garynull.com.
All the best to you. We're out of time.
Thanks, Gary. Really appreciate it.
I want to thank all of you for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have a very interesting email here. The person's name is Thornton, and he's from New Orleans. And he says that there's a small group of us who get together and listen to your PRN commentary hour. And he says, of course, the things down here that are the most famous are music and food, but there's really nothing to stimulate the cerebral cortex. He says your progressive commentary hour, in their opinion, is the best hour on radio. And his question is, why can't we hear your show amongst the other syndicated shows?
Well, I'm not sure of the question.
Oh, okay.
I
guess they're thinking that your show or your progressive commentary hour should be a syndicated show.
It is syndicated.
Oh, all right. I don't know why he's asking it then.
No. We are heard all over the world. Stations large and small everywhere.
Huh.
But, in fact, anyone who hasn't gone to the website should go to the website. By the way, we have a whole new design website, easier to navigate, lots of articles, and look up Progressive Commentary Hour. That's the most downloaded program we have. And then a second one is Conversations with Remarkable Minds, hundreds of individuals that will give you insights in ways that are not normally shared and heard. Anything else?
I just got an email from John. And he is asking, very practical question. He says, you just indicated that there are many states with irreversible droughts. And he's asking, why can't U.S. technology address and solve this problem? For instance, why can't we use HARP technology to change the drought weather patterns? Why can't we desalinate ocean water and flow it into the drought areas? Why can't we extract water from humid air? And why can't we plant thousands of trees to hold the water?
Two of those are realistic. We can plant millions of trees. I believe we should be planting about 10 to 20 million trees per state. We can create desalinization plants. They're very expensive, take about 5 years to build, but that can be done. This uses too much energy to take humidity out of the air. But HARP, in my opinion, is one of the worst technologies ever and has contributed to some of the problems that we're seeing today. It should be closed down completely. But otherwise, the thought is a good thought. And we cannot take a state that is drought-ridden because it has no aquifers. You have to bring the water to the people. and you have too many people in those areas, and they don't want to leave. They built a certain lifestyle and standard of living, so they are saying, bring us the water. And there will in time be an effort to bring billion-dollar pipelines for water, which are not going to have the same problem environmentally because they're not carrying oil or gas from the Great Lakes, in all likelihood, into these areas. And they'll pay a lot for that, in which case to live in those areas is going to be extremely costly. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice. Is Utrice there? No? Okay, Utrice, are you there? Not at this moment. She stepped away. She'll be right back. Have a nice day, everyone.